All righty. Well, welcome to today's very special interview and teleseminar with myself, Joe Polish, my two rock star friends, Marie Forleo and Tim Ferriss. Marie Forleo is in New York City. I'm in Tempe, Arizona. My name is Joe Polish. I am the president of a company called Piranha Marketing. We have got a very special guest. You're going to hear from Marie in just a moment. Marie, I'm going to let you do the intro of who you are. But basically, my name is Joe Polish. I have a company, Piranha Marketing, where I teach business people, entrepreneurs, ELF marketing, which stands for easy, lucrative, and fun. And I believe there's two ways that you can have a business. You can have an ELF business, which is easy, lucrative, and fun, or you can have a half business, which is hard, annoying, lame, and frustrating. Sometimes it could be hard, annoying, lucrative, and frustrating, but for the most part, there's no reason to have a business that's not ELF. And the reason why we're going to be interviewing this amazing guy, Tim Ferriss, today is because he wrote a book called The 4-Hour Workweek. You can check out his website at 4hourworkweek.com. I would also highly, highly, highly recommend, as soon as humanly possible, you get a copy of his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, and it so resonates with the ELF methodology that I believe in. And Marie Forleo is the one that actually turned me on to this book. So, Marie,
yes.
I'm gonna introduce our sponsors and everything in a moment. When I say sponsors, I mean the people that were responsible for promoting this teleseminar to their client base. This invitation has gone out to over several hundred thousand people. So there will literally be thousands of people listening to this particular call that we're doing. Those of you that got on live today, consider yourselves lucky, because I know that the lines will actually tap because we can only get a certain amount, but this will be listened to. It is going to be recorded. But for the most part, this book, our objective today is to recommend a book to you. You're not going to be sold on any back-end products. There's nothing that we're going to advise you to do other than from the bottom of my heart with as much sincerity as I can muster. This is one of the most amazing books that I've ever read, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And, Marie, you turned me on to it. And in the time we have available today, we just want to, you know, share as much value as we can with people and then make the recommendation that they go ahead and get this book. And we're doing this really more so because we so much appreciate what Tim has written and put together that we want to share it with a lot of our clients and a lot of the people that sent this out. So, Marie, tell everyone who you are. And then I'll say who is responsible for inviting the people on the line today, and then we'll hit Tim with some questions and just get some amazing stuff for everyone to learn today.
Sounds good. So, hi, everyone. I'm Marie Forleo, owner of The Good Life Dash, Inc. I'm a life coach, also a Nike athlete, and author of an amazing little book called Make Every Man Want You or Make Yours Want You More, How to Be So Damn Irresistible You'll Barely Keep from Dating Yourself. And just a little bit about me. I'm interested in creating a lifestyle revolution. Primarily what I teach is to teach people how to live the life that they want right now. And I don't believe it takes long. It does not take years. I just like very unconventional, fun, and easy ways, kind of like, Joe, what you were saying about ELF, to get people out of their heads and into their life. There's no reason that it needs to take a lot of stress, struggle, or anxiety to have the life and relationship of your dreams. And this book fits so perfectly in with what I teach and, Joe, with what you teach, that I'm thrilled to be able to, Tim, I mean, I called myself basically your book pimp because I feel like I've been pimping this book to absolutely everyone that will listen to me. So it is so thrilling for me to be here on this call with you. And I'm just interested in everyone that's hearing this to get themselves a copy, and not just one copy, 5 copies, 20 copies, 100 copies, because you can give them out to your friends and we can really create a shift in society. So I'm thrilled to be here. And, Joe, I'm going to pass it back to you so you can thank everyone who's responsible for making all these people on the call.
Yes, thank you, Marie. And, of course, if it was not for Marie, then many of the people that are on the line today would not even be here, because many of us would not even be aware of Tim Ferriss's amazing book, although seeing what it's doing right now on the bestseller list, it's going through the roof. So this is a really profound book. And I know it may sound unbelievable to some people, the 4-Hour Workweek, especially if you haven't read it. If you've read it, you know that obviously there's so much value in there. But we'll squash any skepticism that anyone has about the possibility of being able to have a 4-Hour Workweek. What I want to thank a few people. David Cross and Richard Rossi, Marie Forleo, obviously, Lori Morgan Ferraro, who Red Hot Copy, she's awesome. She wrote the sales copy that actually was the invitation for many of the people. Dan Cashel and Joshua Shafron, they emailed this. Many of their people are on the line right now. Chet Rowland, Robin Robbins, Eben Pagan, Dean Graziosi, Rex Richards, Patty Mara, Pamela Yellen, and the folks Scott and Clate over at Infusion, which is the database software. I want to thank all of these individuals for promoting this to their clients. Nobody's making any money out of this. All we're doing is really recommending a book that we all feel is fantastic. And just a little bit of background, this is the only thing I'm going to read about Tim, and it's just a very short bio. And who is Tim Ferriss? Who is this individual that you're about to hear from? Okay. Serial entrepreneur and ultra-vagabond, Timothy Ferriss has been featured in the New York Times, National Geographic Traveler, Maxim, and other media. He is a guest lecturer at Princeton University in high-tech entrepreneurship, and his New York Times bestseller, The 4-Hour Workweek, is his debut book on ideal lifestyle design. He speaks 6 languages, runs a multinational firm from wireless locations worldwide, and has been a world record holder in tango. Tango. You're going to have to teach me how to dance one day, Tim, by the way.
I'll teach you the 8 step.
No, I know you don't even want to go there, but anyway. A national champion in Chinese kickboxing and an actor on a hit television series in Hong Kong. And this is what's most impressive is you're currently 29 years old, and you have more insight than most people I've ever met. You came just 10 days ago from the time we're doing this interview. You came and spoke to my high-level coaching group, which is $25,000 a person to attend. We have 26 people that are in that group. We hold it at my Tempe headquarters of Piranha Marketing, and the group absolutely loved you. I have people in that group that make over $100 million a year that have read your book since that time and thought it was absolutely amazing. And before you headed off on an airplane, we spent a few hours with myself, the top ADD, ADHD psychiatrist on the planet, Dr. Edward Hollowell, who's been on Oprah 4 times, on 2020 a couple times, sold 2.5 million books. We're there with Eben Pagan, who makes over $2 million a month online, Dean Graziosi, who has sold over $100 million worth of his infomercial products, a great guy, one of my very close friends. And we all sat and just had a brainstorm session, and everyone was just amazingly impressed with the way that you've laid out how to run a business and run a life. So we're here to talk about this book. So anything that you want to say before we get started, Marie's got some questions we want to ask you, but just any background that you'd like to share with the listener before we get into it.
Well, the first thing I'd say is I think you and I would make a very cute tango couple.
yeah, absolutely.
Although I think it might have worked better with your longer hair, but the one point I would want to make, just as a brief snapshot, and thank you all for helping to put this together. The response has really been overwhelming, so I've given my thanks before and I'll give them again, but I need to say that. But I want people to also understand that when you hear the name Princeton and things like that, certain assumptions are made, but I came from very middle-class origins. My parents never made more than $50,000 a year combined, so there's no need to be a Rockefeller or an Ivy League graduate to use any of the options or strategies or principles that I outline in the book. And most of the people who are case studies in the book have children, are married, have what most people consider the normal responsibilities, mortgages, et cetera. So these things are not impediments whatsoever. Just wanted to bring things down so that people realize that these what we'll be talking about on the call is accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, I've read a lot of books, and my two favorite books that I've read in the last year have been Crazy Busy by my friend Dr. Edward Hollowell and your book. It's just amazing. You've got so much research put into this book. And when I say research, I just mean it's not, none of it's just here's a book to entertain yourself. I mean, you have, at the end of every chapter, you have a section called Q&A, but not questions and answers. It's questions and actions. And there is more actionable stuff in your book laid out. Here's what to do. Here's exactly how to do it. And here's the resource to go to if you're going to outsource your life, if you're going to get the best travel deals, if you're going to save time, if you're going to use a fulfillment center. I mean, you just list so much useful stuff. It is truly a million-dollar Rolodex in a book that people can get right now for about $13 based on the website that we'll give them to go to if you go to bn.com. I will say that my objective for doing this call today and picking your brain, Tim, is really just to help you drive sales of this book. You are on fire right now. This will probably be the month that you actually, and I'll let Marie, if you want to address this, because I just want to be completely transparent for everyone listening. Because I know when people hear something like a title, the 4-hour work week, you know, they have all kinds of thoughts that may come to mind, like, yeah, right, whatever. And I want to talk about that. That's one of the first subjects. So, Marie, anything you want to say to that?
Yeah, there is something. You know, and I've heard, first of all, I love, the book is just incredible, and it's made a huge impact on my life in the very short amount of time, not only that I've read it, but that I reread it and keep utilizing the strategies and the principles that you lay out, Tim. Josh, my boyfriend, is like, he's doing cartwheels because I'm literally off of my email at least 30 to 50% of the time, meaning that it's that much more free time I'm spending with him and with my stepson, so it's amazing. But the thing I wanted to bring up was that I know a lot of people out there might be like, well, all right, here's this guy, he wrote the 4-hour work week. He's obviously not working 4 hours of work, you know, a week now, and I just want to put that out there because I know that you can respond to it. You and I talked a bit about it when you were at my house and we were hanging out, and I want you to just kind of let people know what's going on and how this is a different period, and this is such an important message to get out into the world that, of course, it's not going to happen in 4 hours a week when you're promoting an incredible book like this.
Well, not only that, but I think the title is very easily misinterpreted. I would like to emphasize that the book does not in any way promote being idle. What the book is intended to be is a blueprint, a menu of options for creating time, and then how you choose to spend that time is up to you. But many people will choose to spend that time on creating new companies or spending time with their families, traveling. The options are really limitless. In my particular case, I'm having a blast right now. I mean, I'm in East Hampton on Long Island. As soon as I get off this call, I'm going to go to the beach. And in between things, you know, I have cool phone calls like this and talk to producers and what have you. The learning curve is so steep for me right now. This is actually what I want to spend my time doing. So the goal isn't to spend time playing Nintendo Wii 24/7 or anything like that. Or staring at a wall. The goal is to spend time, create time, which is the first step, and then spend it on whatever gives you personally the most fulfillment and the most excitement. So the 4-hour work week is, there are a lot of ways that title can be misinterpreted, but it's about the positive use of time, not idleness.
Good. Okay. I love that.
So I mean, how would someone go about to, at least, I know people have a lot of assumptions that they make, and I know you talk about the false assumptions that people have about how they can work, how they can live, how they can make money, but they've never tested them. So is it really possible to have a 4-hour work week? Can you just speak to that?
I absolutely can. So another characteristic of the book that makes it somewhat different from many of the other books out there is, like you said, Joe, there's a lot of research that's been put into it. And the case studies range from Fortune 500 CEOs and entrepreneurs who've made hundreds of millions all the way down to the single mother with two children who makes less than $40,000 a year, who's able still to take a one-year sabbatical around the world. And the 4-hour work week, the literal 4-hour work week is possible. And when I talk about work week, I'm talking about time dedicated to income generation. And that is possible, but there's also the entire spectrum from where the listener might be now, let's say 80 hours per week, down to 4 hours per week. So it could be 15, it could be 20, it could just be 40. I've had people say to me, I thought the title of the book was the 40-hour work week and I was going to buy it anyway because the average work week now is 70 hours, as reported by Forbes magazine recently. And so it's a step-by-step process. It's not as though you go from 90 hours a week one day to 4 hours per week 12 hours later. However, the process of lifestyle design and reducing, sort of redesigning the system, redesigning your life, whether that's that includes your career, your business, it doesn't take very long. You can make some of the biggest steps in the first 48 hours, and then you can usually transition to the point where you've reduced your workload about 80% in, I would say, 2 to 3 months maximum. It's an incremental process, but it's actually a very fast process. But the answer is yes. And there are two points of reference I would use for that, or anecdotes almost. The first is, and Joe, you might have been the person who even told me this, but Richard Branson was one of my, he's been one of my models, so to speak, for a long time, founder of Virgin. And he said that he can get his work, his most important work, done in the first 15 minutes of the day if he prioritizes effectively. And this is someone who has many more balls to juggle than most people listening to the call. And secondly, is that there are many people, millions of people, who do no work at all in the sense that I'm defining it. They have passive income. So the four-hour work week really isn't that unattainable at all. It just requires making some very uncommon decisions and testing assumptions.
Yeah, you know, what you just said about making very uncommon decisions, it's absolutely true. And, you know, Richard Branson, who fortunately I have gotten to know a little bit, he's speaking at my super conference this year, and I had dinner with him last year. You know, he has 40,000 employees, and he still does all these insane, you know, everything from, you know, balloon rides to going into the Antarctic to doing just all kinds of wild stuff and lives this, you know, really enjoyable life, has his own island and just contributes massively, literally hundreds of millions of dollars to charity and does all kinds of great stuff. But he's, you know, he doesn't follow the status quo, either do you. And the term you use is lifestyle design and new rich, which I want to get to those terms, but I want to also give Marie an opportunity because I know she's chomping at the bit to ask some stuff. So I'll shut up for a minute. Marie, go ahead.
Oh, no, it wasn't. I was actually, you know, when you mentioned the thing about charity, one of the things that caught my interest, Tim, was that it says, even on the one of the first pages of the book, it's about supporting your local teacher. And some of the profits, actually 10% of your author royalties are donated to DonorChoose.org, and I just didn't know what that was, and if you could just tell us about that briefly.
Okay, sure. And I think it ties into a general principle that I want to introduce, because it's really one of the fundamental principles that the people who've read the book embrace, and that is the avoidance of either or selection, the avoidance of either or mindset. What I mean by that is, I can have fun or I can have profit. I can have fun now and then not have enough money for retirement, or I can do something that's tolerably mediocre for 30 years and have enough for retirement. Don't artificially constrain your options and make it A or B. I think it's possible, I know it's possible, to have fun and profit. I know that there is practically no correlation between effort and result if you're not doing the right things. But if you do the right things, you have more options than A or B. And so, for example, I've had people say to me that they'll give back, they'll contribute to charities or to their causes of choice when they have X amount of money, and that to do so now would be ineffective. And I don't think that's true. I think that it's possible to do both simultaneously if you do it in a very clever and uncommon way. So for me, for example, I am donating at least 10% of my royalties to DonorsChoose.org, which is funded by Piero Midiar, one of the founders of eBay, and essentially a model, an eBay of philanthropy, whereby people can contribute money to specific teachers around the country in public schools who need money for school projects or materials. And so you might say, well, you know, 10% of your royalties, that's not that much. But here's what I'm doing. I'm actually putting that in the very beginning of the book, and I'm catalyzing other people to make donations, and I'm also getting publicity through radio and national media. So what's happened? My goal was to help them to hit national expansion, and they're going to do that now in the next 6 months. So, and all that took was two sentences in the front of my book. It took no effort on my part. So there's some very interesting approaches when you stop thinking in terms of either or. You can have both end. It's very common that you can have your cake and eat it too, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that would be one angle. You know, there's stop thinking in terms of limiting limited A or B options. Like I can have fun and travel, or I can have a family and be a responsible parent. That's an artificial limitation you're placing on yourself. You can have both of those things, for example.
You know, one thing I want to touch on is in your book, and correct me if I misquote this, is you use the term profit. And, you know, Marie, when you just asked that question and brought up the topic that you just talked about, you mentioned the word profit. And in your book you say, I believe it's profit is only profitable to the extent that you can use it, and for that you need time. And right now, predominantly, we've got entrepreneurs that are listening to the call, or people that are in some sort of position where they make their money based on results. It's not the time and effort economy, as my friend Dan Sullivan refers to it. It's the result economy. So it doesn't matter if they work 100 hours a week or if they work two. All that matters is the results that's produced. And so you can make literally hundreds of millions of dollars, but if you live in a prison with golden bars, so what? And your whole message is, you know, it's about time, it's about mobility, it's about money. So, talk a little bit about, I guess, I want you to talk about the new rich, this term, but if you want to explain what your deal concept is first, if that makes more sense, I'll let you choose, because you would probably know the flow better than I, but kind of explain that foundational stuff to the listeners so they get it.
Sure. Let me give also just a quick background on how the book came into existence, because I think it's important to understand my personal evolution and how that ties in. So I went from, in 2000, I moved to Silicon Valley and worked for a startup. A friend of mine had sold a company for $480 million there, so it seemed like a good idea at the time. And I was very quickly putting in 80, 90-hour weeks working on, I spent one Thanksgiving sending email to prospects. Hopefully that's the most depressing thing we have on this call. And then in mid-2001, after 9/11, actually, because I had several friends who were killed in 9/11, realized that you're not automatically guaranteed 50 or 60 years of additional lifespan. And I started my own company, as many entrepreneurs do, with certain goals of freedom in mind as my motivators. But very quickly lost track of those goals and started focusing on the indefinite growth model, where, you know, did I make more this month than I made last month? And very, very quickly, within 6 months, resumed my 90-hour work weeks. And in mid-2004, had gone through three very good relationships, and realized that it was unsustainable. And at that point, I was making high five figures, sometimes six figures per month. So I was making more per month, twice as much per month as I had been making per year. So financially speaking, most people would consider that very successful. However, I had no time, and I realized that the practical output, the lifestyle value of your money is dependent on time. So I went to London for 4 weeks, limited myself to email once per week in an effort to reassess my situation and stop reacting every 5 minutes. I expected checking email once per week instead of 200 times per day would damage my business. That was my assumption. Okay, so this is leading into testing assumptions. And the profit in the company actually went up 30% as soon as I removed myself from the information and decision flow. When I forced myself to redesign the business to accommodate that policy of checking email once per week, everything changed. And instead of going back to the U.S. after 4 weeks like I had planned, I spent the next 15 months traveling through more than 20 countries, seeing how far I could outsource and automate my life. Okay, so how does this relate? What I realized in the process of doing these experiments, in the process of teaching the students at Princeton from places like Argentina, what I realized from interviewing people ranging from billionaires to employees who had managed to create complete mobility is that there are actually three currencies in a digital world. And in descending order of importance, those are time, income, and mobility. All right. So the extent to which you control time and mobility, especially time, multiplies the value, the lifestyle output of your money. So you can make, let's say, just $50,000 a year and achieve the lifestyle that would have been associated with, let's say, an investment banker who makes $1 million a year of 10 years ago. Okay, so that brings the three currencies into focus. The new rich, are those people who have mastered time and mobility and really understand the new menu of options that are available, whether that's outsourcing your life to MBAs in other countries for $4 or $5 an hour and having them run your life, geo-arbitrage, all sorts of interesting things that many people haven't even seen before.
Define geo-arbitrage, if you could, real quick.
So geo-arbitrage, I'll give you a personal example of geo-arbitrage, and this doesn't mean that everyone has to do this, but it's one option. So when I lived in Argentina, I was making U.S. dollars. My living expenses were in pesos there, so I was able to live on the in a penthouse apartment on the Fifth Avenue of Buenos Aires, which is a very cosmopolitan, safe city. It looks like Paris. For a few hundred dollars a month. At the same time, I had virtual personal assistants in India and Manila who I paid in their local currency. So I was making dollars, living expenses in pesos, and then paying my virtual assistants in rupees, which added up to about $4 an hour. Actually, the best team that I have now is $4 an hour. And so what you find is by really taking advantage of a global economy by taking advantage of a global virtual workforce, which anyone can do very quickly. I met with the CEO of Elance recently to talk about this. Everything changes. You have so many different points of leverage and so many new options. So that's geo-arbitrage. Some people call it geo-arb now. So that's the new rich are the people who understand and leverage time and mobility.
And Tim, can I say this one thing too? So if that piqued anyone's interest that's listening, in the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, you don't just talk about this. You lay it out step by step by step and give the exact websites and places to go to find all of these people for whatever thing you need. It's absolutely amazing, which makes your book such a valuable resource for anyone that uses it. So anyway, sorry.
No, thanks, Joe. And it is true though. I mean, I wrote this book. Writing does not come easily to me, and this book took years of research and effort to put together the way I wanted to do it. And I assumed that this could be my one and only book. And if I were hit by a bus the day after it came out, would I be happy with it? And, you know, if it was, but wait, there's more, call this number and we'll sell you the next book, I wouldn't have been happy with it. So everything that I've done, all the resources I've used are laid out step by step, like you said. And that includes sample emails. That includes sample autoresponders that you can cut and paste. It includes bonus chapters on the website because I had to cut 100 pages out of the book. So you're right. I mean, it's intended to be a standalone volume. You don't need anything else. So the DEAL process, the DEAL process, is the common process that I found among these high performers in the new rich, whether that was a CEO of a Fortune 500 company who managed his entire empire remotely, or, you know, a gold medalist in the Olympics, or a 21-year-old who drove a Lamborghini, or a single mother who was able to travel the world with her children. They all followed a similar process. And what I realized those steps were was DEAL for entrepreneurs. And that stands for definition, elimination, automation, and liberation. So definition is where we do a few things. We define our target monthly income and target daily income. This is a step where you define your ideal lifestyle very precisely in terms of doing and having. You determine the average monthly cost of that. So you calculate the average cost of your lifestyle, and that becomes your objective, essentially. And in this step, you also would define, you'd apply things like the 80-20 principle, Parkinson's law. We can talk more about those. Then we move into elimination. So I'm a much stronger proponent of elimination than I am of organization. I think that in the technological age, in a digital age, it's very common that people focus on how to do things, so they're very efficient without focusing on what they do, being effective, in other words. And so I strongly encourage people to go on what I call the low-information diet, where you really control your intake of information and ruthlessly eliminate everything that isn't getting you closer to that TMI or that TDI. And that could include firing customers. That could include canceling appointments. That could include eliminating 80% of your product line. There are many, many different options, but elimination is almost always a better solution than better organization. Automation, in the context of entrepreneurship, relates to a few things. Relates to establishing a system and processes outside of your own head. So what you're doing is you're going to create a business that is process-driven as opposed to owner-driven, as opposed to adrenaline-driven. And to achieve that, you need to take yourself out of the information and decision flow. So how do you architect a virtual company in that way? Much like Eben, I mean, he's an absolute master at this. Or how do you restructure a company that's already up and running so that you can remove yourself, so that you're not a toll booth? That's what that particular section talks about. So how do you automate income and create sort of a management by absence protocol, which is actually a term that I borrowed from the founder of Patagonia, because he spends most of his time surfing and rock climbing.
Very cool.
Oh yeah, he's a brilliant guy. And then liberation, the last piece, is the mobility piece. And so we have definition, elimination, which is the time piece, automation, which is the income component, and then liberation, which is the mobility piece. And this is how to take advantage of mobility. This goes into the geo-arbitrage. This also talks more about how to automate your life. And it also talks about filling the void. And this is something that very few books, actually I haven't seen many books that even address this, which is once you remove the office and work, income-driven work, how do you fill that time? How do you fill that void? And that is not an easy question to answer. This is why most retirees are very depressed. This is why many people who are rich, I have a friend who just sold a company to Yahoo for a total valuation of $850 million, and now he has this like post-coital depression where he doesn't know what to do at this time, because his identity for many years was entirely based on this particular project and company. It's a tricky question, but answering it is what ultimately gives you the greatest rewards. So what are the activities? What are the interests? What are the projects that you can pursue to fill that void? And those are the four steps of somewhat of a long answer to a short question, but I want to give people as clear a picture as possible.
Well, and can also, and then Marie, I'd like to have you ask some questions to Tim, because I don't want to step on your toes too much. In the book, I want to mention this, that you do have exact processes and questions laid out that people can fill out. You also have on your website to accompany the book exactly how to get people to understand how to do this, how to liberate themselves, how to get clear on what their goals, their objectives are, what they need to basically do. And it's very simplistic. It's very easy to do. It's completely laid out step by step for everybody to follow if they so want to do it. And one thing I do want to mention is that I'm a very big believer in the not-to-do list. And one of the things that resonated so much for me in this book is you're one of the first people that I saw really write about that in that way. And I believe a not-to-do list is infinitely more valuable than a to-do list, because it's all the things that, that get in our way of getting really the results and things that matter. So one thing I'd like you to talk about is the difference between happiness and excitement. I love how you write about that in the book, and I'd like you to touch on that if you could.
Sure, absolutely. So I'll touch on the first point really quickly, the not-to-do list. This is something that Jim Collins is quite fond of as well, and really what you don't do determines what you can do. And so one of the applications of the 80-20 principle, which I'll explain in a second, that we don't often see is applying it to negative things. So the 80-20 principle, Pareto's law, dictates that 80% of our desired results come from 20% of our activities or 20% of our inputs. So in my particular case, for example, in 2004, I had 120 wholesale customers in more than 15 countries. It ended up that five of them were contributing more than 90% of the profit. So when I put those remaining 115 on autopilot effectively and then issued an ultimatum of how we could communicate to a few of the high maintenance and low profit customers, my management dropped from 60 hours per week to about 2 hours per week for that particular facet of the business. And the way that you determine what needs to be eliminated in many cases is by asking yourself, what are the 20% of activities and the 20% of people that consume 80% of my time? And you sit down and you really do a time audit where you look at where you're spending your time, with whom, and then what is returning a quantifiable result. And that this this entire process is very precise. There's very little room for error. I mean, I lead people through it step by step in a very quantifiable way because much like Peter Drucker, the management guru, I dislike the word guru. He did a lot of research and was well-known among economists. But he said, you know, what gets measured gets managed, and I think that you need to measure things. The question of happiness is one that I think is important because happiness as a word bothers me quite a lot. And the reason it bothers me, I was originally a neuroscience major at Princeton and then moved to linguistics and studied more than at least a dozen languages now, and I'm very fond of precise definition. And happiness is so overused as to be practically meaningless, and it's dangerous when you pursue something that is hard to define. So you say, I want to be happy, I just want to be happy, and you really don't stop to think about what that really means. And if we look at, for example, love, and you ask yourself, well, what's the opposite of love? And the opposite of love is not hate. Those are actually two very similar emotions. The opposite is indifference. So what I propose is that you try to find a better word for happiness by looking at its opposite. And the opposite of happiness, I don't think, is sadness. I think, again, those are very closely related. I think the opposite is boredom. So you find that many people aren't miserable in their jobs. They're not miserable, entirely miserable in the companies they've created, but they're simply unexcited, and that's the word that we arrive at. The conclusion is that a more effective, actionable synonym for happiness, as most people mean it, is excitement. So I think that recalibrating your system to set objectives, to set extremely unreasonable goals based on excitement as your metric instead of happiness is much more effective. And that pursuing excitement is really, in my experience, a cure-all. And you find that people who have all of the characteristics of being fulfilled and happy, as much as I dislike that term, are actually those who are most excited about what they're doing. And that's the term that I arrived at after much, 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 much deliberation and thought on the topic and asking other people. I think that if people were to take just that away from this call, to remember that if you can't define it or you can't act on it, forget it. Forget it entirely. And this applies to many other things, but we'll just limit it to that for the time being. But if you can't define it, don't use it, and certainly don't try to act on it. So if you can't define it or you can't act on it, forget it. But shift from happiness to excitement, and you'll see an immediate change.
Tim, there's two things that it makes me think of. It's one is I can't stand the word success. I think it's another one of those words that is just awful, and I think success is dead. And part of what got me so excited about your book is that it's really about looking to see what you want to create in your life and how you want your life to be. And you've put out such an incredible menu of options that are so clear, and it's kind of like you go to this amazing life buffet, this lifestyle design buffet, and you can pick and choose and play and experiment. And I love your use of the word experiment, because that's another great thing. It's not like if you go for any of these ideas that you can't then retool. And that actually brings me to the question I want to ask you, is what are some of the mistakes or the lessons or the things that you learned early on in the process as you were experimenting and retooling with your life to come up with all this incredible wisdom?
I would say one of the realizations that I came to, which was an unexpected realization, was that removing work does not automatically create life. And what I mean by that is the most common retirement fantasy, so I call retirement a false idol. It's not that I disagree with retirement savings to some extent. I think that that's an insurance policy for the worst case that you're physically incapable of working. But the most common retirement fantasies are something along the following lines. I'll just do this for another 20, 25 years until I make $1 million. I'll put $1 million into bonds, take $80,000 per year, and then sail on a yacht in the Caribbean. Okay, on the surface, that seems pretty cool. And it's like the last 2 minutes of Shawshank Redemption or any movie we might have seen. Like they sail off in the Caribbean boat and they have a white linen shirt on and they're drinking Bacardi and everything's, yeah, sunshine and kittens. But
sunshine
sunshine
and kittens. Yeah, well, so,
but everything, but what you realize and what I realized is when I was traveling through 20 countries and I had automated income, sitting on a beach, let's say in Thailand, because I spent a month there, is very interesting, or I shouldn't even say interesting, it's very nice, it's pleasant as a recovery for 3 or 4 days, and then it is excruciatingly boring. And most people don't realize this. They say, you know, I'm just going to get a boat and sail through the Caribbean. And I say, well, have you ever sailed before? And they say, no. And I say, well, maybe you should dip your toe in that fantasy and try that for a week before you decide that you're going to spend 30 years, 40 years even, doing that until you die, because you might want to change your mind. So where I'm going with this is people very seldom think about what they'll do when they no longer have to work. And I propose that you need to answer that question now, because if you can't answer that question now, then you really don't have an answer for the why am I working question. And that's why I talk about mini retirements and taking that traditional retirement and redistributing it throughout life, which you can do, which with these what are essentially repeat sabbaticals, and they could be 1 month, 3 months, 1 year, and it's very, this is amazingly compatible with families. There's nothing that I discuss that can't be done by families. But the realization was that subtracting work does not create life automatically. You need to design a lifestyle. So if you don't, for example, plan a compelling non-work activity for the weekend, let's just say Saturday. So if your Saturday plan is, well, I'll just figure out what I'll do Saturday, and you wake up Saturday, 11 o'clock, and you roll out of bed, you say, I'll just check email for a second, and you don't have any compelling alternative, you're going to check email for 3 or 4 hours, come away from it, say, wow, I don't know what I should do. It's starting to get dark, or all of my friends are already busy. Maybe I'll go to the park. Maybe I'll go to a movie. And before you know it, that day is over. You haven't had any recovery period. And then Sunday is spent either checking email again or worrying about Monday because you have 20 hours or 12 hours before you need to go to sleep and wake up early to repeat the entire exercise. So you need to pre-plan life. You need to schedule life. You need to design life, because when you subtract work and the office, it leaves a void. And I think that was one of the strangest realizations that I came to. And I interviewed dozens of retirees, some of whom were extremely successful. One gentleman had acquired more than 120 companies in his work life, but he had no identity. He had let all of his other interests atrophy to the point where he had no identity outside of work. So when he retired, he became very depressed, near suicidal, and against doctor's orders went out to start another company because that's all he knew how to do. And he's already had 2 heart surgeries at this point, and is probably not going to last another 5 years. And that's what I would like to help people to avoid. It's just not necessary.
Well, you know what? I think not only does your book help people to avoid that, but you actually give case studies and show exact examples. I mean, you know, what you had mentioned earlier, you talk about the 21-year-old Lamborghini-driving kid, the globe-trotting single mother. You actually show how CEOs do it. These are real people that are out there doing it day in, day out. You're a living example of that. And it's all right there. It's just for people to be open-minded enough. And what I love when you first start the book is you say that some of the things I'm going to write about are going to just seem absolutely insane and so contrarian to what you have heard and read in the past, which they are. But that's one of the reasons why I think your book really is going to be such a huge and is such a huge breakthrough. I mean, I believe in order to have a breakthrough, you got to break something. And one of the things that people need to break is their assumptions and their preconceived preconceived notions of this is, you know, how you need to live your life and make money. Because my perspective, and purely this is just my perspective, I see the world right now as is most people feeling completely overwhelmed and totally insane. And I deal with thousands of entrepreneurs and many very, very successful people that create enormous amount of value and do good things for the world that, you know, are literally up to their neck in overwhelm. And you do such a fabulous job of describing the low information diet. And I want you to talk about that, because this alone, just on email, the amount of time that I have saved just from reading your book recently is huge. And not just time in terms of physical time sitting in front of a computer or dealing with correspondence, but just the mental space of not being preoccupied thinking about it. And I'm a person who's interviewed some of the top experts in this area. You know, I've interviewed David Allen for Genius Network, Getting Things Done, Dan Sullivan, Strategic Coach, Julie Morgenstern, Barbara Hemphill. I mean, some of the world-famous authors in the whole subject of time management and priority management and organization. And your perspective just added on top of all that knowledge that I already have. And so, Dr. Edward Hollowell has this term called screen sucking, where people sit down in front of a computer and literally, you know, I'm going to check email for 20 minutes, and 2, 3, 4 hours later, they're still glued to the computer. And you learned this great this process, and you lay it out step by step in the book along with the autoresponders and this whole low-information diet. So I know we have a limited amount of time, but can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's one of the most profound things that people will get out of reading your book and why they need to get it immediately, because instantly, I mean, people can literally in a matter of minutes save themselves hours a week just on that alone.
Oh, absolutely. Email is the most effective tool for simulating forward motion without actually getting anything done. And we're all guilty of this. We all have been at some point. But there are a few things we need to recognize. So just to focus on email for a second, email, let's just say Outlook, is not an effective workspace. It's more of an inbox, as I'm sure you've heard before. But what you need to realize is that in a digital world, you have the potential for infinite interruption and infinite minutia. So you will be interrupted and overwhelmed by minutia to the extent that you do not create barriers to prevent that from happening. And you can either have a primary intake or you can focus on output. You really can't have both. So the key is to reestablish these barriers, to decrease your connectivity, to decrease your availability, so that you can focus on what I call single tasking. So single tasking, pretty self-explanatory, is the opposite of multitasking. It's focusing on one mission-critical item and completing it start to finish without interruptions. If you can do that, and you can focus simply not on a to-do list, but on the one item per day that you can answer yes to when you ask yourself the question, if this is the only thing I do today, will I be happy with my output? If you just did that every day before 11 o'clock, I say 11 o'clock a.m. because I want to avoid lunch as an excuse for postponing it, you will generally be able to easily double or triple the profit or income, whether that's personal or business. So taking a step back from that, though, and returning to email, there was some internal research done at Morgan Stanley, and they realized that their highest-level executives and even middle-level managers were interrupted an average of every 3 minutes. And when you're interrupted, there's separate research, this is from Forrest and a few other groups, that shows that more than 40% of the time you move on to your new task that interrupted you without ever finishing the first one you started. That's why you end up with 30 windows open on your computer screen. And yeah. Recognize that the computer screen is a representation of the burden that's being placed on your mental RAM. So if you have 30 windows open, you quite simply can't manage that amount of information. So I'll give one simple tool that people can implement, and Joe, you mentioned it already, the autoresponder. So this is a very simple workaround that has become quite popular in Silicon Valley. So what you do is you create an autoresponder or a vacation autoresponse, and all it says is something along the following. And I have on 4hourworkweek.com, I have sample autoresponders people can cut and paste on the blog. But it says something like the following. Dear all, in an effort to escape the inbox and get actual work accomplished, or because of increased workload, I have a new email policy. I'm attempting to check email just twice per day, respond to email twice per day, once at 11 a.m. and again at 4 p.m., whatever your time zone is. If you need anything before one of those two times, please don't hesitate to call me on my phone. Then you give your number, or you can leave that out. I leave it out. Thank you very much for understanding this move to effectiveness. And then your name, and that's it. And this takes literally less than 60 seconds to set up in any major email program like Gmail or Hotmail or Outlook. And you'll notice that it does two things immediately. Number one is it forces people to reevaluate the urgency and importance of the topic of their email. And at the same time, it's giving them the ability to access you if they have to. And you'll find in almost every experiment I've done with this and other people, less than, I'd say, 5% will ever call because they say, please get back to me right away. This is really urgent, not because it's urgent or important, but because they're afraid you're going to forget to actually reply. Secondly, this gives you the breathing room to define and then focus on executing, single tasking, the few critical things as opposed to being interrupted every 5 minutes by the trivial many, the manufactured emergencies that people push on you every 5 minutes if you give them the opportunity to do so. And just that one step alone will usually create for people an additional 10 to 30 hours per week, which they can either spend going to the beach or with family, or they can spend on actually focusing on the output items that they've defined using the 80-20 principle, for example. But the low information diet is really the one of the first steps people need to take to put up their barriers and reestablish their ability to be productive and not just busy.
Yeah, I mean it is so true. Like email is the ultimate form of multitasking because when you're looking at an email screen and you see a bunch of different emails and different subjects, I mean you literally have all these different interruptions vying for your attention all in one place staring at you. And if you spend your entire day glued to that, I mean your entire day is spent not only in probably one of the most unproductive ways. But from a mental stress standpoint, you're asking your brain to try to interpret all these different interruptions continuously. I got a copy of your book for my entire team, and my initial thing when I first read your book, going, my God, you know, if any employee reads this, they're not going to really want to work in a company in the typical 9-to-5 sort of fashion from reading this if they're intelligent. And my take on it was I have a great team at Piranha Marketing. And what I believe this book will do and has done for my team, the ones there that actually have the insight to see this, is just simply make them more effective. I think people continuously confuse activity with accomplishment. And what your book really spells out is there is no relationship between being busy and being productive or being happy, or well, I shouldn't use the word happy, excited, and getting what you want out of life. It's totally based on results, and here's a process on how to do it, and one of the ways to do that is to eliminate the interruptions, because if you don't set up these boundaries, then you don't control your life, it controls you. And I see that with so many different people. So the autoresponder that you just read, I want to let everyone listening know, there are multiple different versions in the book and on the website, and it's laid out for you, and literally for the cost of this book, unless your time is worth less than $13 an hour, it will instantaneously, like you said, 15 to 30 hours a week you could save. I don't believe that's an exaggeration at all. The people that I've recommended this book to in the last 2 weeks, I've gotten every single person that has read your book that I've recommended it to is like, this is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. The stuff he's written on email is great, and so many people are just so consumed and stressed by that one thing alone, and it's completely laid out there for everyone. So I just want to, I know I'm sounding redundant and I'm beating a dead horse, I just want to make the point that it is so darn valuable. Get this book immediately. Marie? I want to take the opportunity just because I know some people may be limited on time, and I got an email. I did check this, and I apologize to him in advance because I did check email during the call here just to see, I check in on the conference lines, we've actually blown out all of the lines. So do not hang up. This entire call is filled. People are calling in and getting busy signals. So this is obviously a very popular topic and subject. But I just want to ask you some more questions, and I don't know what your time availability is, and I'm sure Marie has a couple more too.
Joe, if I could jump in for 1 second.
Yeah.
Just to say, because I think this might not be immediately obvious to people, one of the most interesting side effects of this business, or this book rather for me, has been that companies are bringing this book in. And so, for example, I spoke at Google World Headquarters recently, and every person in the audience, Google bought a copy of the book for them. And PayPal, I've spoken to PayPal, I've spoken at a bunch of some of the most innovative companies in Silicon Valley, and they all invited me to speak after hearing me and after reading the book. And like you said, it's not about idleness. It's not about not working. It's about working on the right things. It's really about how to shift from being presence-based to being performance-based. So I just wanted to make that note. And we'll be talking a little bit more about Google in a few minutes, so people should definitely stick around. But
well,
go
you
know, ahead.
Yeah, I just want to tell people how to actually get the book. And so I know you're going to offer some bonuses and everything, so I'd like you just to talk about that now if you could, because I want everyone to have an opportunity to go and get the book, and we're going to make recommendations on how to actually purchase it, because our objective, and I'm being completely transparent here, it was one of my things. I said, Tim, I think this book is awesome. The people at my $25,000 person group said, you know, we're happy to help. And all of the people that are on the line today are simply from entrepreneurs like myself and Marie that said, this is a great book. I think it will really help our clients. Nobody's making any money out of this. We're literally just trying to drive book sales because we want to see this book. And when I say we, myself and our friends, want to see this book go to number one, and we want to help you get this message out to as many people, because I think it will make such a huge positive shift and create so much value to people. So we are literally recommending that you go and get this book, not only a copy for yourself, but anyone in your life or in your sphere of influence that you think could benefit from this. So Tim has put together some special offers for you if you buy more than one book. And so, Tim, go through the list, and let's make that recommendation.
Sure.
All the listeners.
Absolutely, and this is exclusive to this call. I'm pretty excited about it, so I'll just tell people what we're trying to do. So, if you're interested in the book at all, I would ask you to go to bn.com, so BarnesandNoble.com. Don't go to Amazon because Amazon has some odd ways of calculating book sales. Go to bn.com. The first thing I'll ask everybody to do is just take down my email address, and I almost never do this. I have multiple email addresses, but this one is tim@4hourworkweek.com. It's just tim@4hourworkweek.com, tim@4hourworkweek.com. And here's what I'm going to make available to people who are interested on this call. For anyone who orders 5 or more copies, I'll send you free private access to, number one, a 60-minute, never-before-released interview that Jack Canfield, co-creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul, did with me about high-end marketing and how I hit the New York Times list, bestseller list, in 4 days using blogs and social media. So how did I, with no offline advertising, with no offline PR, make my book a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller? There's a 60-minute interview I did with Jack Canfield with his high-end group, and I'll give you a link to that. So if you buy 5 or more copies, you get that 60-minute audio, and then you also get, this is the first time Google's done this with any book in the history of the world, you'll get a $30 coupon for Google AdWords. This is the first time in history they've done this. And you know, right there, you'll be getting a lot of value. And you can use that to test any type of business concept you might have, headlines, you name it. And I go through that in the book. So if you get 5 or more copies, all you have to do is go to bn.com, buy 5 or more copies, send me the email receipt to tim@4hourworkweek.com, and you get the 60-minute interview with Jack Canfield and myself, and then the $30 coupon for Google AdWords. Now, the second thing I'm offering to people, and I don't do this, but somebody had asked me about private coaching before this call started. For the first 10 people who commit to ordering 100 or more copies, and I want those copies to get to people. I don't want them sitting here in your garage. So you know, make sure that if you're interested in this, that it's going to get to people, whether that's colleagues or employees or friends or family or whatever. But for the first 10 people who commit to ordering 100 or more copies, you'll get the other two bonuses, and then you get two exclusive offers. Number one is you get a free VIP ticket, including open bar, to my next private party in San Francisco, which will be held in the next 2 months or so. So you'll get to spend an evening with top bloggers and tech influencers in the world and drink the best liquor on my dime. And that's an invitation-only event. We'll probably rent out one of the top clubs in San Francisco like I've done before. So you get a free VIP ticket to that, and then you also get inclusion on 4 exclusive one-hour group coaching calls. So for the first 10 people who send me an email at tim@4hourworkweek.com indicate that they're willing to buy 100 or more copies, that ends up being about $1,300, you get the VIP ticket, you get the two other bonuses that I already mentioned, and you also get to be on 4 one-hour group coaching calls. So it's 4 hours of total time with me, and I do not do this. I never do this, and I really – this is I'm making an exception because I want to thank Joe and his friends and everyone else for helping make this happen. But speaking bureaus are already billing me at about $20,000 an hour for presentations, and this will be 4 hours in a tight group coaching call with me. And that's it. And I'm not planning on offering that again. I have very little interest in personal coaching. So that's it. You have to buy 5 or more copies. Send the receipt to the email receipt at bnn.com to tim@4hourworkweek.com, and I'll send you everything I just mentioned. And then if you're interested in buying 100 or more copies, you get the 4 coaching calls, and you get the VIP invitation to a private party in San Francisco. So that's it. That's all I'm going
to
say.
What do you want them to put in the subject line, or how would I identify this so you can basically
so I can filter it out. Yeah. No, good idea. So put Joe Polish in the subject line, and if you get 5 copies or more, just put Joe Polish 5 copies plus, and then if you're interested in the 100 copies and getting those bonuses, just put Joe Polish 100 copies plus. And again, for the 100 copies, it's the first 10 people, and that's it. So if you're interested, please let me know, and it's just tim@4hourworkweek.com.
Yeah, I just love knowing that my name is going to be in print that many times. That's great. And by the way, I want to make it clear to everyone listening, no, we are not doing any revenue split here. You know, I'm not making a penny out of this. I'm a huge believer in this book. I know it'll create enormous value for you and anyone that reads it. The same goes with Marie and every single person that invited you, all of our friends, to listen to this interview today. So we're literally doing this because we read this book. We thought it was amazing. We want to help Tim get that much, more exposure and drive this book to number one. So incredible bonuses. If you want one copy of the book, you know, bn.com. If you want 5 copies, just reiterate, you get the $30 coupon for Google AdWords, and you get a 60-minute never-before-released interview with Jack Canfield, which will be fabulous because so many people are asking, you know, how in the heck is this guy all over the place? You not only explain much of this in the book, but in that interview you'll talk about things that you don't talk about anywhere. And
right.
So if you get 5 copies of that, BN, as in BarnesandNoble.com, and for those people that get 100 or more copies, which will literally cost about $1,300, they get an invitation to your next party that you're going to do in the next couple of months, and they get the 4 one-hour coaching calls where they can actually ask you specific questions and stuff. And like you had mentioned, you're on fire right now, and you have people billing $20,000 per hour for you to present. And that's in a crowd, so people don't even get to ask you Q&A. So people get 4 hours with you for 100 books. And anyone that has read your book is going to immediately see that, you know, spending 10 minutes with you personally talking about anything would be a tremendous value, easily worth the investment of, 100 copies of the book. So anyone that wants that, go to bn.com, do it today. And so I just wanted to get that out there. So thank you, Tim. And
my pleasure.
Yeah. And why am I thanking you? You're not doing it. I mean, we're showing.
Why am I thanking Joe? I'll say out of the 3,000 email I get per day, 2,999 of them are from Joe.
Yeah, exactly. I do that. You know, what is it? Kittens and what was the other part?
Kittens and Sunshine?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I prefer Chicken Monkeys. But nonetheless, Marie, would you like to ask Tim a question before I continue to go on my tangents here?
No, no, go on your tangents. But I was just thinking, yeah, we should probably think about the most important things, because I want to keep us in theme with keeping things nice and short and tight and, you know.
Sure.
Exactly. All right, well, let's talk about your Dreamline process, if you could, quickly, because I think that helps. It's one of the best things in your book, because it helps people identify what's important to them versus, you know, what I want out of life. Why do I have a business? Why do I put all these hours in? You know, what's all this for? What's the meaning of life? You have this thing called a Dreamline process. What is it?
So the Dreamline process is it's a separate breed of goal setting, you could say. The issue that I have with goal setting is that people are encouraged to be very realistic and reasonable in setting goals, and I think as a result, their goals are insufficiently interesting or exciting to actually motivate them to achieve them. So dreamlining is the opposite of that. It is setting extremely, from a conventional standpoint, unreasonable and large objectives with very short deadlines, but there's a timeline associated with this, and there are next steps associated. So let me take a step back and give you just the brief overview. So when you set a dream line, and I tend to set goals 3-6 months out. I don't do very much long-term planning, because I think to have any type of really long-term planning that's reliable, you need to really aim for that safe middle ground where things are predictable, and I don't think that makes life very interesting. So very short deadlines, but what you're going to define is what you want to have and what you want to do. If, for example, you had $100 million in the bank and you retired yesterday, so after you go to Ibiza and run around with glow sticks or do whatever you're going to do to get the corporate enslavement out of your system, once you've had that explosion of fun, how do you spend your time, and what do you want to own? What are the things that you would do and have to give yourself meaning and excitement? And you really sit down and you define those things. Not only do you define them very precisely, but you actually calculate the cost of these things. So this comes back to the target monthly income and target daily income. But let's just say hypothetically that you want to have an Aston Martin DB9. You want to go to Fiji once a year. You want to go ski in Aspen for a month every winter, et cetera, et cetera. You want to have the entire Victoria's Secret catalog in your closet, whatever it is that you want to have. Fine. You sit down, you define those things very clearly, and you calculate the cost. And then you have milestones to achieving those goals. So if the Aston Martin DB9 is one, you're going to choose specific characteristics of the car. You'll go take a test drive, et cetera. And what you've realized when you sit down and calculate the actual cost of moving through this dream line and actualizing these things, it's almost always much less than people expect. So, for example, the lifestyles that most people associate with millionaires is what they want. It's not the $1 million in the bank. So this streamline process is to really separate the means, which is the income and time, from the end goals, which are these items in the dreamline. And, for example, when I was in Argentina, the last time I was there, I went to Mendoza wine country and I chartered a private plane with a personal pilot and guide to take me over the snow-capped Andes and to vineyards for a day. And that entire process, that entire experience, cost $150 US. And on a separate note, for example, I was in Panama, spent a week on a private research island owned by the Smithsonian, had three fishermen who took me to the best dive spots, arguably in all of Central America, and also caught and cooked all my food for me for a week. And that cost $250. And I could give you examples from Tokyo, from Oslo, from all the other places I've been. These things are not extremely expensive when you sit down and you go about it in a very uncommon way. And even an Aston Martin DB9, you can have – I found an Aston Martin DB9 on eBay with 1,500 miles on it you can have it for about $1,300 a month. Okay, so I want to make it clear to people that postponing life until you have $1 million, $2 million is just unnecessary. I had a conversation with a friend of mine very good friend of mine from Princeton in San Francisco, and he's finishing business school. He's going back to investment banking. And I said to him, I said, why on earth are you going back to investment banking? I thought you didn't like it. And he said, well, it's terrible coming home at midnight. I mean, that sucks. But if I work really hard for 5 or 6 years, I could be pulling in $3 to $10 million a year. And I asked him, dude, what on earth would you do with $3 to $10 million a year? And his answer was, I would take a really long trip to Thailand. And you can take a really long trip to Thailand and live like the king for about $1,500. So when you sit down and dreamline all of this out, you'll realize that your dream existence, your ideal lifestyle, is usually very attainable if you go through the deal process. And, you know, some people say, oh, you know what, I just want to have a chance to drive an Enzo Ferrari or a McLaren F1, which is the car that Larry Ellison has, the founder of Oracle. I can show people how to do that for $300. There are some very interesting options out there. So that's the dreamlining process, to show people that the most outrageous goals are oftentimes the ones that are most attainable, because everyone else is aiming for base hits. And when you have these extremely large goals, those are goals worth pursuing. So when you hit obstacle one, when you hit obstacle two, when you hit obstacle three, you know, if it's a trip to Columbus, Ohio, you're going to quit. But if it's a trip to Greece with your entire family, where you'll have a private catamaran and a host who will take you from island to island and give you the best wine in the country, that's going to get you past those hurdles. So,
Tim, I want to just interrupt for a second, because there's something that you've mentioned before that I just want to highlight, and it tags along to what you're talking about now. You know, and I know you've challenged people, I think it's in your Princeton class, you know, challenging them to go ahead and contact three, like, top-level A-list celebrities. Mm-hmm. And how most people just don't do that. Like, they won't reach for the big games, and everyone thinks like that. That's why no one ever really moves anywhere or does the big stuff. And I was wondering if you could just mention that story, because I think it's incredible.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. So in my Princeton class, I realized, as depressing as it is, after a few classes, that most people would listen, they would agree with me, and then they would probably go out and either forget it all or do exactly the opposite. And I think that fairly
right.
Typical, which is why I have the questions and actions at the end of each chapter in the book. But so I began issuing a challenge to the students in my Princeton class, and there were different pieces to the challenge, but one of them was contact three impossible-to-reach people and get them to answer one question each that you've always wanted to ask them. And basically I said the more difficult this person is to reach and the better the question, the more I'll be impressed. And the person who does this in the most impressive fashion, the student who does this in the most impressive fashion, will get a free round trip anywhere in the world. And I gave them a very tight deadline, like 48 hours. And what you found is that about 40 students would come up afterwards. They'd say, oh, my God, yeah, I can't wait to do it. Yes, I definitely want to do it. Send me information. And then at the end of the day, the first time I did this, no one completed the challenge. And no one completed it because they assumed that everyone else was going to do it, and they overestimated their competition. And as a result, no one did it, not a single person. And the second time I offered the challenge, I told them that story. I said, look, last time, no one did it because they all assumed that everyone else was going to do it. And that time, I had three people do it. And consistently, each time I offer the challenge, only three or four people do it. Now, what's the result of those three or four people? The last time I issued this challenge, these are just normal students. And when people hear Princeton, they have a lot of images, but these are not extremely wealthy, blue-blood people. These are average students, a lot of them on scholarship. They're smart kids, but they have all the same insecurities and fears that everyone else does. And these three students in the last challenge got personal letters back from George Bush Sr., the CEO of Hewlett-Packard, the CEO of Comcast, movie stars, musicians, just an amazing list of about 20 people just from these three. One of them actually parlayed his first contact with the CEO of HP to actually meet him and get invited to go into a private box at a hockey game with the CEO. You know, the chairman of the board of Google. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. And they were able to do it because they aimed high. And so few people aim for that area. It's the least crowded. So when I told people, you know, I want to make this book a New York Times bestseller, I had person after person after person tell me how unrealistic it was. Even one of the heads of the largest booksellers in the United States, one of the largest booksellers, not Barnes & Noble's reporters, but another one, went to the trouble of sending me two PDFs from historic data from the Wall Street Journal to show me why I couldn't have a bestseller.
I love that story.
And I had no offline PR, no offline advertising, and I hit the New York Times and Wall Street Journalist based on the first 4 days of sales. And everyone was completely stupefied because I didn't do any bookstore signings, I didn't do any touring. And it's because, again, I questioned assumptions. I test the assumptions. Just because everyone is doing X doesn't mean that it works. And that's exactly what I talk about in the conversation with Jack, is how I pulled that off. But it's definitely in your best interest to aim high for many reasons. And I want to just make one more point. Even if you don't hit that goal, the process of striving for it is exciting. Okay? So you can either aim for a mediocre goal, in which case you're pretty bored while you're pursuing it, and then you're still bored even after you accomplish it. Or you can aim for a really exciting goal, in which case you're definitely going to be excited while you're pursuing it, which could be 6 months, could be a year, could be 1 month, could be 2 weeks. And then either you get it or you don't, but at least you have that guaranteed excitement for that period while you're pursuing it.
Exactly. That is the byproduct of pursuing this and actually taking this sort of action. I think anyone that reads this book to not get literally 100 to 1,000 times their investment back almost immediately, they'd have to literally be insane to not get that much value from it. It is such a good book, so laid out with actionable steps that people can do. Is there anyone that would not be able to take away value? Too old, too young, you know, having children? Is there any people that are not able to utilize your methodologies and your strategies?
Yeah, I mean, this sounds unbelievable, but I really don't think so, because the book isn't about – now, are there people who can't go to Brazil and surf or go to Japan and learn sword fighting or do these other ridiculous things that I do? Sure, there are people who may have certain impediments to doing that, my objective with the book is not to present a How to Become Tim Ferriss manual. It's really to provide a new menu of options, a lifestyle design buffet, so to speak, from which people can pick and choose. So I have yet to find somebody who, even if they apply 10% of the book, won't be able to make some significantly life-altering changes in a very short period of time. It's intended to be a range of options that people can pick from. So I have yet to come across it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, Marie, do you have any other questions?
Because this has just been incredible, and I just want to just encourage everybody to get this, get multiple copies, give them to your friends and your family. I can't tell you, it's made such a big difference in my family, in the people that I know, my friends, Joe, you. Tim, I'm so glad that I was a stalker and hunted you down.
and there's the other thing. You know, you actually contacted me. I responded back, and there you go. Most people assume that I'm completely unreachable. And, you know, it might get to that point, but, you know, you didn't let that stop you, and here we are.
Yeah, no, it's great. It really is great. It's so much fun.
And one other thing I want to mention also is one of my objectives for this book is a vehicle. And part of the reason that I wanted to do this, and I'm so grateful to Joe and Marie and everyone else for helping make it happen, is my goal is to do much more than just sell a lot of books. But to get the first step is getting the book, the ideas, to as many people as possible. At that point, you're going to start seeing a fundamental social shift, like Marie had said. And I'm actually already getting in touch with politicians and legislators to make some significant changes, even in the law as it relates to vacation time and things like that. But it all starts with the ideas and getting the book to as many people as possible so that there's a huge groundswell of support for a backlash against this type of overwork ethic. And so I have some very big plans, but it all starts with getting the ideas to as many people as possible.
Absolutely. And you have testimonials from some major players and business thinkers, Jack Canfield, Phil Town, Michael Gerber. You have some of the most successful entrepreneurs that have bought your book, read your book, given you testimonials on it about how impactful and how much it's changed their lives. And so I believe everyone that is participating today will get the same value. I, again, want to thank all of the people, David Cross, Richard Rossi, Lori Morgan Ferrero, Dan Cashel, and Joshua Shaffron, Chet Rowland, Robin Robbins, Evan Pagan, Dean Graziosi, Rex Richards, Patty Mara, Pamela Yellen, and then the folks at Infusionsoft, Scott and Clate. They notified their clients about this particular call. It is completely filled up, and this call will be listened to literally by thousands of people, not just the people that got in on live, but also the recorded version of this. The only objective was to recommend a book that I believe if this book sold for $50,000, it would be worth that. It is that profound. It is that impactful. If, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. The four-hour work week may sound unbelievable. Even if it helps you save 4 hours in a week, that is worth the $13 investment to go to bn.com and invest in this book. And again, if you order five or more copies, you'll get a $30 coupon for Google AdWords, which, you know, in the book, Tim explains how to actually utilize this and set up your business to replicate yourself. So it'll totally make sense, and that is a great value there. You get that for free for getting five or more copies of the book. You also get a 60-minute, never-before-released interview with Jack Canfield about how Tim has hit the New York Times bestseller in 4 days using blogs and other social media. If you do go, you have to go to bn.com, not Amazon, but bn.com, get five copies of the book, and then email tim@4hourworkweek, F-O-U-R, workweek.com, tim@4hourworkweek.com. Put in there that you listen to the call, so put my name in the subject line. And for if you order 100 or more copies, you'll get the other bonuses, which is Tim's four one-hour group coaching calls, which you can ask him questions, and also a free VIP ticket, including an open bar. That's pretty funny, Tim, an open bar, too. It's his next private party in San Francisco. So obviously I'm reading this off a list here because I asked Tim to actually send this over to me. So I got that here. But this is a first-come, first-served, so you need to email tim@4hourworkweek.com after you've made the purchase of 100 copies. And I guarantee you that most people that I know have – huge piles of books and information, especially people that are looking for shortcuts and looking for better ways to do things. I put this book on the top of my list, and so did Yannick Silver. Yannick actually, you've gotten to know Yannick pretty well, and he's just raving about how awesome this book is, and it's true. And so I think anyone that gets this, read it immediately, and you'll see that, wow, this is impactful, and I think you'll be thanking the person who actually sent you the email for this invite. And so, Marie, I want to thank you for, of course, introducing me to Tim, and we got an opportunity to hang out for about 10 days ago, all of us, and it was very cool. And you're doing good things, Tim, and so I encourage you to keep doing what you're doing. I think you can absolutely impact so many people's lives with this, and hopefully this call was just a start to introduce a lot of people to your work. And that's it. Any famous last words?
Famous last words. I would say pursue life, don't postpone it. There's every reason to really create your ideal lifestyle now as opposed to deferring it, and every reason not to postpone it. So that would be one. And number two, I would just say it's been a real honor for me to be on the call. I really consider UGO and Marie and everyone whom I met at your event to just be consummate professionals, and which is a real rarity. I don't use that lightly. So it's been an honor for me to be on the call, and I thank you for helping to put it together.
Absolutely, and thank you. And so what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to unmute the line and let everyone say goodbye to Tim and wish everyone a good day, and get your butts over to bn.com and get a copy of Tim's book and start reading it right away, because next week you'll have a heck of a lot more free time. I can guarantee that. So thanks, Marie, and thank you, Tim.